Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It is Friday, June 13th, and this is episode 92. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Cadillac Optiq V, BMW's battery problems in the US, and Toyota's chairman, Akio Toyoda's funny maths problems, and of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the resplendent Mr. Tom Mulogany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And I'm going to ask him why his set looks different in a moment. And we have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And you in the comments watching us live on a Friday morning, US time, Friday afternoon over here in Europe and so on. We've got to ask, where's the usual set? You've got a thousand chargers behind you. Where's the big State of Charge logo powered by Q-Merit?
Have I never done the podcast from this angle in the
Maybe,
garage?
Maybe,
I don't
know.
Really remember. In any event, I'm still in the garage. I'm just to the, I guess, the right of where I usually set up. I have my table set up there. I'm shooting a video now, and I have everything placed perfectly for different scenes so that when the video gets produced, you don't realize that I recorded one thing one day, the other thing the other day. I wear the same shirt, everything's set up exactly the same. It's like a seamless split. So, you know, when I do a lot of my charge reviews, sometimes those videos take me at least a week to shoot. So I try to leave everything in the exact spot if I haven't finished that one scene, and that's the case today. So I don't want to move it. I'll never get everything back exactly how it was set before. So you get to see this today.
Very nice.
You don't wear the same shirt all week though when you're filming though, right?
Well, I take it off. I have a hanger in the garage. So if I'm wearing a specific shirt for a certain scene, right? I take it off, I hang it up, I put my other clothes back on. So it's funny. And you know, I shoot videos. Like when I do my charger reviews, the funny thing is I actually make three or four videos on that same charger. So it like number one, I make a video for Q-Merit. It's a cool concept that they have me do. So Q-Merit has a network of electrical contractors. They don't employ these people. They're just regular electrical contractors in your area. But one of the things that they have is a really good back end for these electricians to give them information. So what I do is an unboxing video when a new charger comes out, I get it. I unbox it. I let everything out on the table. And I say, okay, so here's the mounting bracket. It gets mounted this way. You can bring your wires in from the back or the side. These are the screws they give you. You're going to need a Torx T3 to drive this in. It's kind of like an unboxing video. So now let's say you're a Qumera contractor and a new charger comes out, like the Emporia Pro that just came out. Nobody's installed that yet because it just came out. They get to go to their portal and see a 5-minute video of me showing them everything that's in the box so they know what to expect when they install that for the first time. So that's just one thing I do. And then I have to shoot my long video. Then I do the quick charge 10 minutes. So like it's labor. it takes me more than a week to do a charger review because of all these things. Anyway.
Wow. Wow.
We lost half our viewers, I think, in that.
No,
way.
No,
2 minutes
not
when
so.
I was saying that. But anyway,
no,
that's why I have to set everything up.
I love looking behind the curtain and seeing how it's all done. Next time you watch Tom's videos, you'll know that it's been a whole production. And there's a continuity department as well and a wardrobe department. But it's like a Hollywood blockbuster.
Yeah. Well, I have a Qumera shirt that I have to wear when I do those Qumera quick charges.
Oh,
it's like,
cool.
I have to put that on and I do a scene. Then I take it off. I put my state of charge shirt on, do a scene. It's pretty
amazing.
Funny.
Amazing. But,
I've had to making videos. I've realized that, oh, I need to shoot an extra little bit at the end, like the next day. And so like dive into the laundry hamper. Oh my God. Oh, here we go. Well, it's just for video for appearances. You can't smell it.
Yeah.
Do this. One
of the things,
my goodness.
talking about behind the scenes really quick before we move on. One of the things that I've been doing is I've been saving clips when I make mistakes. And I'm going to put out a blooper video at some point when I have enough clips. And I'm just mad that I haven't been doing this from the beginning of when I was shooting videos, because there were some hilarious things that happened to me. One time I was recording inside of a car. So I had the one door open with the camera set up and I'm sitting in the driver's seat and a bee flew in and stung me in the middle of recording.
No.
So I see it coming and I'm like, shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, God damn it. And I'm so mad that I didn't keep that clip because it must have looked hilarious. But anyway, I'm putting together like a blooper clip now. And at some point when I have enough of them, I'm going to just put it out there. All the mess, the camera falling and the lens breaking and all kind of things like that.
Wow.
That should be funny.
Yeah, I look forward to Christmas, a Christmas reel, a Christmas blooper for the New Year show or something. Okay, well, look, as we discussed last week, let's put a little bow on last week's discussion about the feud. Was it ever a real feud between Tesla's CEO, Elon Musk, and the president? As we discussed last week, some nasty things were said and tweeted and online and to reporters in the White House between the two. Tesla's price took a big hit. This week, the president has come out on top, it appears, with the Tesla CEO taking in a more apologetic tone online, saying, "I regret some of my posts about President Donald Trump last week. They went too far." Well, for his part, the president said, when asked if he could forgive Musk, that he guessed he could. He also said about the apology, "I thought it was very nice that he did that." Yeah, it came just after Donald Trump said maybe we should cancel those NASA contracts. I'm not sure that's within presidential power, but we play by different rules these days, it seems. All's well that ends well. But Tom, this isn't the end of the, well, the we talk about a Hollywood blockbuster. This is like watching some sort of, you know, soap opera drama unfolding in front of us. Probably not the last we've heard from those two.
Oh, of course not. And you knew if there was going to be any kind of hope of a reconciliation that Elon was going to have to put the olive branch out, because we know how Trump is. He would never, ever concede, never, ever apologize, you know, never, ever, you know, say he went too far. So if there was something going to be smoothed over, Elon had to make the first move. And to his credit, I guess, he's smart enough to understand that the divide was only going to get wider if he didn't come out and say, "I'm sorry, you know, I bow to the knee of Mr. Trump." And that's what he did, basically. You know, it's probably in his best interest to do that. He,
of course.
You know, he came, you know, he realized that this wasn't going to be good for me, and it's better for me to, you know, make this public you know, not really an apology, I guess. Yeah. But extend the olive branch. And
yeah, a good
he's lucky that Trump took it, because he could have very easily said, you know what, I'm done with him. He can apologize 1,000 times. Mm. You know, he's out. And it wouldn't
have
surprised me.
He's back to South Africa.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't have surprised me if he hadn't already started the deportation on Trump's family. Elon's family.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so, it's it was probably for the best to take some heat out of the conversation. And also, if you're going to take a really wide angle view of this, you know, Musk has got a lot of irons in the fire, let's put it that way. A lot of big things that he still wants to achieve as an entrepreneur and a business person. And, you know, with the most candidness I can offer, Trump is an exceptionally old, unhealthy man who's not going to be around forever. And I'm not saying it's a competition of who outlasts who, but do you need to pick a fight with him? I mean, he's going to be around for the next 3.5 years, and then whatever happens, happens, and then he can head off and enjoy the rest of his time having served 2 terms. And I don't need, if you need to pick a fight. But as we discussed off air last week, I think after the show, billionaires are a strange breed. I don't imagine they have too many people around them saying no, and you can't do that. So they probably get their own way quite a lot, don't they? All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about EVs. And we mentioned it last week as well. Tom, you spent some time with the Porsche Macan recently. Of course, this week we've been talking about the Porsche Cayenne winning that hill climb here in the UK, which probably means that the Cayenne is not a million miles away. They weren't saying anything official, but you don't enter a camouflaged EV into a hill climb unless you're ready for the publicity. So that's the next Porsche story we're talking. But the Macan is a beautiful car. And you recently put out a video of you completing a 70-mile-an-hour range test. Tom, how did it do?
So it did very well, as I expected it would. The EPA range rating is 315 miles per charge. This was a rear-wheel drive Macan with the 20-inch aero wheel. So this is the spec you want for range. This is the longest range-rated Macan. The all-wheel drive version, it's the only one that's rear-wheel drive. All the other versions are all-wheel drive. And the longest all-wheel drive one has a 308-mile EPA range rating. So not too much less. But in any event, I ended up driving 343 miles, and it still had 2 miles of estimated range remaining. So you could say 345 if you want to round it up, but just right around 343, 345, a great showing for the Macan, in my opinion. It averaged, you see, if you're watching on YouTube, you've got the graphic up there. It averaged 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour. And I was impressed with it, as I expected. Porsches always beat their range, their EPA range.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. A great number, 343. Yeah. Great number.
So, if you look at the latest comment, Bobby Bison said, "Tom spent half the video complaining the range."
Complaining the range was too good because he wanted to go to a cookout.
I did this range test on Memorial Day because it wasn't a work day. I figured there'd be less traffic. Getting the roads clear here is getting harder and harder for me to do these range tests. And I had a couple of things to go to that day. And I was like, I in my mind, I'm saying to myself, I hope this underperforms so I can get home a little bit earlier. But then as the range test is going on and it's driving and driving, a few times I mentioned on video, I'm like, damn, like, this is ruining my day. It just keeps going and going, and I'm going to be late to the parties. But it was a good showing for the Macan.
And what's the secret sauce to that 343? It's a great number. Is it just a massive battery pack inside it, or Porsche talking about all the various improvements and efficiency things they've made with that car?
So they have made efficiency improvements, but it is a big battery. It's 100 kilowatt hour battery. I think 97 kilowatt hours usable. 97 okay. or 95, I forget. 97 or 95 is, I think 95 is usable. But so, I mean, it's a big battery, And but 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour is not bad for that shape of a vehicle. So, you know, it was a good outing as far as I'm concerned. I was figuring like 330-ish, but you know, the 345 is commendable. I think it's a great result. It's a good road tripper.
Good number.
And it charges great, so which that'll be the next video. But I mean, that's the combination you want: long range and fast charging. And Porsche vehicles have that.
This isn't the same as the latest Taycan in terms of fast charging, but it's almost there, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it charges like a beast. Great. So that'll be the next video coming out. What's up?
We can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Well, I did a 0 to 100 and a 10 to 80 recording. I actually did, I think, more than one just to validate that they were consistent. Because one of the interesting things that I found was at a very low state of charge, when the battery pack, the voltage is low, the Macan charges very slowly for like 2 or 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So the first recording I did, I was like, I wonder if there's something wrong with the charger, or is there an issue with something else? And so I repeated the 0 to 100. I did it once on a Electrify America charger, once on an EVgo charger, same exact results. So it is the car. And that first couple of minutes, it was only pulling like 30 kilowatt or something. And I'm like, damn, like this charger is shot. You're not going to hear on the recording you have up, because this is the 10 to 80% charge recording.
Okay.
By the time the vehicle's at 10%, the pack voltage is high enough where it's accepting full power. But at the very low, when you take it down to zero or below zero, doesn't want to take a lot of power for about a minute or two. And then, boom, it ramps back up, up over 200 kilowatts pretty quickly.
So. I think most people won't discharge their battery that much anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of rare that you go below 5% or, you know.
Most people will never even notice that, because they're just not going down to zero or under 5% like you mentioned. But when I do the full recording, you know, it was odd that I'm hanging at like 30 kilowatt for like into 2 minutes. And I'm like, damn, this is something's wrong here. But you could see the 10 to 80%. Finished up with in 44 minutes. This is wrong. Guys, I sent you the wrong video. I think I sent you the wrong video. It doesn't take 44 minutes.
Okay.
I sent you guys a video this morning to show. That's right. That's not the Macan's charge. You know what that is?
No.
The Optic.
Oh,
no way!
Oh, this is
because I'm watching it go, and I'm like, "This is charging really slow." Sorry, I sent you guys I sent you the wrong video today. Oh,
so you have an Optic?
Yeah, I did the Optic range test a while ago. I just haven't posted the Optic charging video yet. So, look at that voltage. You know, it's not a Macan. It was like 300 volts. So the funny thing is, I was sending a whole bunch of charge recordings this morning to Mark Kane, who does a lot of the analyzing for evchargingstations.com. So I dumped like 6 videos into Drive today, and I shared the wrong one with you. I shared the Optic. So anyway, I'll tell you, Porsche says 10 to 80% in 21 minutes. It does it. It does 10 to 80% in 21 minutes. And you could see there, the Optic 10 to 80% took 44 minutes. So more than twice as long. And the vehicle doesn't even go as far as the Macan does. And they're competitors. You know, an Optic and a Macan would be competitors. Now, I mean, not direct competitors price-wise, but I mean, you know, we're going to talk about the Optic V a little later. That might be a competitor to a Macan. Same size vehicles. The Macan's only a little bit more. And the Optic V isn't going to charge any better. I don't think GM did anything to make it charge better. So, you know, it doesn't go as far as a Macan, and it charges, takes twice as long to charge.
Boo. That's just to go back to really quickly to that range test of the Macan. That's 4.93 hours of driving at 345 miles at 70 miles an hour. So that's almost like 5 hours. drive time. You know,
it actually took longer because,
right,
don't forget, I keep turning around, right?
Right.
And when you get off the highway, sometimes there's a traffic light. I just sit at the light for a few minutes, then go around, make the U-turn, come back. So it always takes me, you know, 15, 20 minutes longer than it should if I was just driving in a straight line at 70 miles an hour, making those turns. Now, it really doesn't affect the charge, the range results, because stopped or driving for a mile or so at slow speeds isn't going to affect the overall consumption or even the range. But people frequently ask me that. They're like, well, wait a minute, Tom, I see you did that range test, but the timer on the car says you drove for 6 hours. You should have finished this in 5.5 hours if you were going 70 miles an hour. Well, that's why, because, you know, in order for it to be fair, I do loops rather than starting one point. And then I try to end where I started to change any or offset elevation. So any event, that takes a while. Sometimes I get jammed up. Like sometimes I sit at a red light at an exit and I'm like, God, this is a long light. And I'm watching my average speed go down and down.
Right.
And that's another thing. People look at it and say, Tom, it says the average speed was 65. This is a 70 miles an hour range. Just sit at a light for five minutes. You'll see what it does to your average speed, you know, and you can never get that back. So anyway.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Matt P asks, Tom, did you use those chargers on the turnpike for the range test?
No, I usually go to one that's right off the turnpike. The new Apple Green chargers will probably be ones that I use at some point once they're there. But I assume you're talking about the Apple Green chargers and not the Tesla chargers that are being decommissioned. So right. I used to use the Tesla chargers when I had my personal Model 3. I used them a few times, but the soon, at least with this new contract with Apple Green, there should be chargers at every stop. There wasn't before. You know, Tesla didn't have them at every location, and now there should be at all of them. And that should make it a lot easier for me with the range test, because I don't have to do as much calculating to make sure I don't run out, which is a job when you're doing this.
Yeah,
indeed.
All right. Okay. I'm having a look at the comments here from Max is in the comments. Max from Outer Spec saying he'd like to have a slightly smaller Macan. Yeah, I mean, the Macan is, I think, quite a small vehicle when you compare it to some cars in its class. It's compact.
Yeah. It's similar to the Optic. I mean, size-wise, yeah. Very similar to the Optic.
Yeah.
I was looking at the specs of the Optics. Its wheelbase is shorter than the Ioniq 5, for instance, or the EV6. It's got like a slightly shorter wheelbase in those cars, and those aren't huge.
Well, it's an Equinox.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right, I guess, I mean, you're familiar with the Equinox, I guess.
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure.
But the Macan is beautiful. A neighbor of mine has the electric Macan, and they do a custom color, one of the Porsche, they call it factory something. They call it Miami Blue, but boy, is it bright. And it's an £7,500 paint option. That's a pricey paint color, but it is beautiful. Miami Blue. I mean, you can't miss that car coming. And he tows his boat with it. So he's got his brand new Macan and a big old boat behind it. So, I've been enviously having a look around the new electric Macan, and surprised how compact and dinky it is. But we've mentioned already the Cadillac Optiq V. Now, V cars are the performance versions of the regular models. And Cadillac already launched its Lyriq V earlier this year, and it's now on sale. Now it's the turn of the slightly smaller Cadillac SUV, the Optiq V. Right, I got the stats for you. Optiq V is 519 horsepower, 60 miles an hour in 3.5 seconds in velocity max mode. That's more power than the standard version, which is 300 horsepower, 0 to 65.2 seconds. It's a couple of seconds there, you're really going to feel the difference. Not as big as the Lyriq V or as fast. Same powertrain, it does have something no other Cadillac has yet. That is a J3400 connector on the side. It is native NACS, my friends. You can charge the 85 kilowatt hour battery pack. They say adding 70 miles in 10 minutes. It's not fantastic, is it? Well, we'll talk about that. Probably a 150 kilowatt peak as the standard Optiq, you would think. They haven't given us their official 10 to 80 time, but we have Tom Mologany. So who thinks that? Range-wise, it gets a Cadillac. That was really loud in my ears, by the way. Range-wise, it gets a Cadillac estimated 275 miles of range, 30 miles less than the standard Optiq. So, now you want one. What's the price? MSRP starts at an estimated $68,795. That is $14,405. We did the math. More than the most affordable Optiq trim. Super Cruise is standard. And we'll get into some other stuff in a minute, some modes and that. Dom, we don't get, obviously, Cadillacs over here, so I don't get V-series cars. What do you think of this?
But you do get, well, I mean, I guess you don't get in the UK because it's right-hand drive,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, but they do have a Europe. I mean, the Lyriq is sold in Europe now, and I think the Lyriq V, which, you know, you were just telling, just got introduced to the US this spring, and it's on sale now. I believe that just got launched in Europe as well, like last week.
Yeah, I want to say somewhere like Germany. I think they started in a really small market, somewhere like Austria. But in terms of the big car markets, I think Germany. I think Germany might be getting the Lyriq V, but yeah, it's a good shout. So what do you think of this then?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had chances to drive it or actually see it in person. Just like everybody else, I'm looking at it, you know, through pictures and screens. But yeah, I mean, it seems okay. I'm looking at it now after we've been discussing the Macan, and I'm thinking, okay, this thing gets up to MSRP starts at $68,795. So with a few options, you could probably get that up to, I don't know, 75 or 80, which is starting to get close to the Macan's price tag, right? The base Macan. But as Nebula said too earlier, this is in a slightly different class. And I think it's probably the ownership experience would also be more affordable. I think Porsche's, you know, if you want to get some in service or add it on, you know, Porsche's not shy about charging you money for that kind of stuff. I mean, there's Cadillac either, I imagine, but Porsche is like another level. But anyway, yeah, I think it's okay. I'm not really sure if I need a V-series, you know, this size Optiq. I mean, 3.5 seconds is good. It's like the original performance Tesla Model Y as far as speed wise. I mean, that's plenty quick for anybody. I don't know. I mean, Cadillac's doing pretty good with their SUVs in the States right now. They're selling a fair amount better than a lot of other brands for sure. Mm. So I think the market's going to like it. And yeah, I think it's kind of cool that you have it has the different modes, so put your own mode together. You can take different elements that you want and have your own custom setting. And the V series has a button on the steering wheel that you can just the V button, boop, and then you get all your settings for you that you like. You want a sport, you have a sport setting that you want to go to, you know, on the sly, you know, you just boop, hit that button. And it has a launch mode as well. I think they call it. The main one is the competitive mode. That's like their sport mode. Yeah. It sounds like a bunch of fun. I don't know, Tom, you've driven the regular one. Did you like driving it?
Yeah, I liked it. I if you remember, I commented when I had it, if it was available when I got my Equinox, I might have considered getting one of those if I could have gotten a decent deal on it. I definitely enjoyed my time in it. I think you might have, we talked about comparing it to the Macan, which, you know, I don't think it's a perfect comparison, but I definitely think there could be some cross shopping with the V version, not the regular Optiq, but the V, because the price is close, the size is very similar. But probably a better direct competitor is Model Y Performance. You know, that's probably you know, something that would be right in its wheelhouse. Price wise, I think this would be about $5,000 more than a base Model Y Performance. We don't have the exact price on the Model Y Performance, the 2025 yet. I don't think Tesla posted that, but I think most people are saying 62 is going to be where it comes out at. So it's going to Model Y Performance would be a little bit less. I think you get more with the Optiq V as far as like just creature comforts and just the, you know, it's more of a substantial car. It's not as Spartan, as minimalistic as the Model Y. I'd rather spend time personally a long drive on in the Optic V. Personally, I think it even looks better than the new refreshed Model Y. Range should be similar. The Model Y performance, I think, is 277, the EPA range rating, and this is going to be 275. So range should be similar to a Model Y performance. The Y is going to charge a lot better, but for a lot of people, that's not that big of a deal. I know we obsess over it here all the time, but many people, own an EV, DC fast charge a handful of times a year, if they're there an extra 15 minutes, it really doesn't matter to them. That's for a lot of people, that doesn't make a difference. Yeah, Nebula says the interior will be the real decider between the two. For people that is a high priority with. For me, the interior on the Optic V is so much nicer than the Model Y, but I still run into so many people, and when I talk to them about the Spartan interiors on the Model 3 and the Model Y, their response is they prefer it. It's better to them. So I don't know. That's all personal preference. I much prefer some of the Tesla competitors as far as the interior environment than what Tesla offers.
Yeah, I'm just having a look here at the dimensions because obviously I'm not familiar. We don't have the Optic over here. Having a look at how the Optic compares to the new Tesla Model Y, so-called Juniper, the Cadillac Optic is about 1.2 inches longer. See, I wouldn't have put it longer from just the visuals, look at it on screen, longer than the Model Y. The Model Y Juniper is very slightly wider by about 3 millimeters, but it's, negligible in practice. And the Optic is slightly taller by just under an inch. The Optic has a longer wheelbase by 2.6 inches than the Tesla Model Y, or the Model Y Juniper has a slightly higher ground clearance. So, really comparable vehicles in terms of size and segment, but not, on pricing, as you say, Tom, Model Y performance Juniper not on sale in the United States yet, but I think your point of 62 is probably not a million miles away. You can get the federal tax credit still on Model Ys. Whilst it's still around, it'll probably be around until the end of the year. We did see one of the senators from Ohio this week try to move that forward to September, tabling an amendment, I think, to bring that expiration forwards, and also to double the EV tax from $250 to $500 federal tax. So I don't know if it's got any traction from others, but thanks a lot for that. So that your federal tax credit is still sticking around on the Model Y, which makes it very affordable. And of course, the unfortunate Tesla depreciation, which has been higher than the market average lately. So you wait 6 months and get a nearly new one, and you could probably get one a lot less than an Optic V. But if you want to drive around in something that you don't see very often, you're not going to see too many other Optic Vs for a while. So you're going to drive something a little bit special, and you might choose to pay a slight premium for that as well. But nice looking car. How's the comments looking, Dom?
Donovan and somebody else just made some good points about fast charging. Like some people are, we had one of our viewers that just took a long road trip in his Honda Prologue, and he said, oh, it's Kerry, yes. Kerry just did a long road trip in his Prologue, and he was DC FC speeds, not as bad as people make it out to be. And that's with the Prologue, it's also the same Ultium GM platform. So, similar, I guess, a similar, like probably a 40 minute charge up. Donovan and somebody else also mentioned just waiting. I just experienced waiting for slow cars to charge in a road trip last week. No new car should take more than 30 minutes to get to 80% in 2025. And I kind of feel that too, Donovan.
Yeah.
Because the technology is there. Other companies have got this, and improved on that 30 minute mark by quite a bit. So I don't really like that there's laggards out there. Like the Ultium platform is just kind of slow. I mean, it sucks, but it is.
The voltage is so low that how many amps they pump into it, it's not going to charge fast. But my point, let me just interrupt, then I'll let you continue. My point before about that it doesn't make much of a difference. Wasn't saying that the vehicles shouldn't charge faster. They right, should. Right. I agree with that. Like, no new vehicle in 2025 should take more than 30 minutes. My point was that to many owners, they won't care. It right, won't be a deciding factor of them buying the vehicle or not, because they so frequently use DC fast chargers that the three times a year that they're out, that they're at one, that extra 15 minutes means nothing. So, you know, that was my point before, not that the car shouldn't do it. Sorry, Don.
Right. That's a valid point, because right, a lot of people don't, you know, even charge, you know, on DC fast chargers in public, or like two or three times a year, maybe.
Never.
I had a surprise trip to Jacksonville last weekend. A friend needed a ride up to the airport, so it's like a 3-hour drive or something there and back, or there and then 3 hours back. So I had to end up using my superchargers, and yeah, it was fun, whatever. Mm. So you never know. But when there's a, especially on the West Coast, I feel like around here it's not too bad that we have like lots of chargers now in my area. It's not an issue like waiting for a charger, but still in Southern California, where there's a lot of EVs and the charging stations haven't quite caught up, that, you know, having to sit and wait for some people with a slow charging car, BZ4X, not fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just having a look here at the Lyric V, as Nebula pointed out, yes, it's now available to order in Germany, France, and Switzerland as of this month in June. Customer deliveries begin November. Pricing starts at €109,000 in Germany, €110,000 in France, €113,000 Swiss francs. That's an expensive vehicle. I think you also mentioned Australia as well. But Cadillac doesn't mean a huge amount over here in Europe. I mean, it probably means something to people who watch, I don't know, 80s or 90s movies with sort of big luxury Cadillac barges playing, you know, that role if it was a car movie. But modern Cadillac brand doesn't mean too much. And so if you're spending $100,000, yeah, I mean, you're either going to have a Mercedes in your driveway or a Porsche or a BMW, aren't you?
Audi.
Mm-hmm. Or a nice, really well-specced Audi. And it's going to be tough for Cadillac to build on. But then again, you could say, if it does, I've seen some comments from people saying, the brand's a little bit broken in the US, then actually you might be a fresh start. It could be good over here in Europe. They can, you know, tell us what Cadillac stands for and why we should spend so much money and what have you. That's the job the Chinese cars have got to do. But of course, Cadillac does mean it's a name we know. But probably slightly outdated, misperceptions on that.
It won't fit.
Cadillac's worked on his brand, forever to get away from that, 80s, 90s history. You know, in the early 2000s and in the 2010s, they really leaned into the sport thing quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
And now they're sponsoring. Is it? They have an F1 team now. They have Le Mans.
Yeah. And so the Lyric V was featured in the Le Mans, all around Le Mans, which is happening at the moment, and then they're going racing with Formula One. So that's really interesting.
Right. So they've been trying to build up this, credentials, like performance credentials, So I guess we'll see how well a job they did at that with these cars. You know, I mean, I like the. I gotta say, I do like the Lyric V, or Lyric, just generally, I like the Lyric. I like just the way it looks. It's got a great road presence. I think, you know, probably in my mind, significantly better than the Optic, but I would probably take the Lyric V like over the Macan or the Cayenne, just because, one, it's price.
A lot bigger.
Yes.
Than the Macan.
Right, right. But I mean, the Cayenne comes out, it'll be more in that category, I think, with the Cayenne. And the Cayenne will be, you know, money. and probably nicer inside, you know, but still, I mean, I don't think I like the looks of the Cayenne more than I like the Lyric even. I just really like the way the thing looks. It's got, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Alahum says F1 is a trap. They have to spend billions and not be in the top 10. Yeah, I guess so. They are a customer of Ferrari, so they run Ferrari engines. So the Cadillac team will be run out of the US, but also based at Silverstone in the UK, and a customer of Ferrari, so running Ferrari engines. They're not building their own engines, the same as Ford are joining Formula One next year with Red Bull. But it's not like the engines are suddenly going to come out from a Ford factory on January the 1st. So they're joining in 2026, but Red Bull powertrains is a thing since there was a whole Honda split thing. But Red Bull have been building that up. But Ford get to put their logo, and I'm sure a big involvement in Formula One. Cadillac doing the same.
Cadillac's not developing their own F1 engine?
Not for at least 3 years. There's a new rules package starting in 2026, new aero and power units and things, and that'll be a customer of Ferrari. So, but as you say, by entering motorsport, that's obviously what they're trying to, on a global scale, talk about their performance credentials a little bit more. It worked really well for a team called Haas, which kind of fly the flag as being the only American team at the moment, coming in as a customer team and just literally reading the list of provided parts from Ferrari and saying, we'll have all of them. Like, we'll have the engine, the gearbox, and everything you've got. Saving money, but also you can pick up some points, is what I'm trying to say. They probably won't spend billions, but they'll spend a lot of money, and you can throw a lot of money at it. But yeah, does it matter that they're going to be Ferraris? Not really. Renault are packing in their engine plan, and Renault are going to be a customer. So let's talk a little bit about, I think we're done with Cadillac. It's going to be interesting to see.
One last thing that I want to add about the Cadillac.
Okay.
So I apologized for sending the wrong video earlier. I didn't.
Oh.
You put it up at the wrong time.
Oh.
If you go look at my message, I said, here's the Optic 10 to 80% charging recording. So we were going to talk about it when we did the Optic. Because right. I'm like, how did I do that? How did I? Because I have all the videos labeled. I'm like, how did I send the wrong video to them? So I looked at our messages. Okay. And I'm like, that was to be talked about when we talked about the Optic V's charging. So which should be the same as their regular Optic, which I just did the recordings on. However, that was before GM did a charging over-the-air update a couple of weeks ago. The interesting thing about that is as soon as they did that and my Equinox got it, I went and did a 10 to 80% charge recording of my Equinox to compare it to my recordings before. And there was almost no difference. So I reached out to GM and I was like, really? Like your OTA update on charging, said it's going to improve charging. I'm seeing like less than a minute difference. Like that's not even something that I would announce. So their answer was, it's going to improve charging when the battery is very hot and when you have your air conditioning on. You know, the GM vehicles have had a tremendous issue with the fact that the DC fast charging slows down so much if you're sitting in the car with the air conditioning on. And supposedly this update is going to improve upon that. Okay. So that's very hard for me to test because I don't have like a recording done when it was 90 degrees and I sat there with the air conditioning on and then do it again and repeat it. So it's going to be very hard to gauge exactly how much it has improved. But I've asked for more clarification from General Motors. I sent them a list of things that said, look, you have to be able to explain to me what did you do and how much of a difference will this make to the average user? Like when it's hot and they have air conditioning on, will the car charge to 80% 5 minutes quicker or whatever?
Yeah.
I haven't gotten a response yet. I probably won't get a response on that, but that was what my question was to them because I immediately went out. I was going to do a video comparing pre and post OTA updates, but there's nothing there to do, so I'm not going to make that video.
Yeah.
And Bert kind of says, I am hearing there are issues of charging the GM EV platform in warm temps. You are recommending to stop AC. Not a good thing when you have a pet. So hopefully that's all taken care of at least. So,
yeah,
you know, that's not, hopefully that's not an issue any longer.
It'll still be an issue. It hasn't been taken care of.
Oh.
It's been improved.
Oh.
It's still an issue. It's still going to charge slower when it's hot out and you've got the air conditioning on. So, but supposedly this OTA will make it charge a little bit better.
Right.
I don't know. Okay. We'll see. As soon as I get information, I'm going to post that on State of Charge because I'm trying to get some clarity on this because a lot of people have reached out to me to help explain why it happens, why it charges so slow. What else should we do?
Right.
Interesting.
We got a little super chat message from Edgar. He says, people that build Cadillac build Corvette, and Corvette is known for winning races. Mm. All right. There you go. Yeah, Corvette's like their flagship performance, you know, vehicle, basically. And yeah, see them around here quite a bit, actually. Quite a few Corvettes in like the latest mid-engine version of it in North Florida for some reason. It's pretty popular up here.
Mm-hmm. And Kerry said turning off the AC didn't change the charge speed much at all. It depends on the battery temperature, Kerry, the temperature of some of the other components. You wouldn't see it every time. It has to be the fact that the thermal management system needs all the cooling it can get to keep the vehicle charging at current rate. So, you know, try that again, you know, when it's 95 degrees out, and you just drove 200 miles and you're sitting in a parking lot and plug in at a low state of charge and leave the air on, you'll notice a difference.
Mm. Posh, I'm here with a humble brag. I didn't see a change in my lyrics charging after the update. Lyrics plural. You have more than one lyric. Is that what's going on? We need to see a picture of this garage.
Or an apostrophe.
Or an apostrophe. Like one of them is cheaper than the other. Apostrophes are a bit cheaper to write than buying more cars. You mentioned Ultium. I don't even know if we call it Ultium anymore. Who knows what we're meant to say, the platform. I saw something this week where they talked about Ultium because it was to do with their LG partnership. But that's been, and I don't think it's anyone's fault in that they were all in with one provider. So if you're GM and one battery company, why not have, you know, and the business is still called Ultium Cells LLC, but and then they're like, don't call it Ultium anymore because we're working with lots, you know, more battery providers. Which seems a very sensible move. Like I'm not criticizing it in the slightest. To have more than one supplier seems sensible. I know nothing. Otherwise, I'd be running the battery division of an OEM. But you can't call it Ultium. But in China, they still do. Because Dominic was working on a story with me this week for EV News Daily, and he sent me the details of Ultium 2.0. And in China, Ultium is apparently still a thing, and they use it in their electric cars there, and that's a 900 volt platform. I think it rolls out in Buicks. I think, isn't that right? Is Dom?
That's right. I was trying to remember where that story was.
Yeah. I think that's the Buick something 5 900 volt platform, 6C rated LFP packs, 350 kilometers added in 10 minutes, and it's all forbidden fruit. And it's still called Ultium, Ultium 2.
Yeah,
but we don't get it, or you don't get it. So there you go.
So Dom just put up a comment from Brendan Flash. Seeing GM charging makes me appreciate how consistent the Lightning charging is. Brendan recently bought a F-150 Lightning. And one of these days, I want to reach out to him. I want to get his opinions on a whole bunch of things after he's had the vehicle for a few months. Maybe we'll even do a video on it, Brendan, if you're interested. But that point that he makes there, it's something I've been saying for the last couple of years. And I've had to consistently almost battle people saying, the Lightning charging sucks. Like, you know, it's, you know, Rivian's, you know, charge 225 kilowatt, Lightning stuck at 150 kilowatt, GM vehicles, you know, like that with the split pack can charge it so much more. So, but I've been consistent saying, look, I live with this vehicle. I drive it a lot long distance and I charge. It's really not bad. And with the improvements that they made now, the 10 to 80% is under 40 minutes. It's like 38 and a half minutes for a vehicle that has, you know, 145 kilowatt hour battery pack gross capacity. I think it could it charge better? Yeah, of course it could. But I tell you, I've had the Lightning for 3 years now. I'm actually going to make a video like my 3-year review. And The DC fast charging rate is surprisingly not something that bothers me at all, which I thought it was going to be one of the things I was complaining about when I first got it, because I was like, oh geez, like, you know, 155 kilowatt, you know, maximum charging rate was what Ford always announced, but we know with the boost, it goes higher for about 7 or 8 minutes. I tell you, that is not something at all that bothers me with the Lightning. Now, maybe if I was towing long distances, which it's not the best vehicle for to begin with, and I had to make multiple stops, DC fast charging stops, it would wear on me. But, you know, me and Kyle did that race to Florida, 1,100 miles in 16 hours. You know, Pete, who's in the comment section, was my driver. You know, that it really wasn't bad, which really kind of surprised me. So anyway, get a Lightning plug-in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
podcast.
We look forward to that collab, as the kids say. Right, let's talk about BMW. They got some battery headaches right now. BMW has planned on building the i5, i6, and i7 at their facility in South Carolina at Spartanburg, beginning with the iX5 next year. And that's great, because they'll be US made. But since announcing the plans late last week, a bit of a fly has dropped into the ointment. Envision, or AESC, the battery company controlled by the Chinese Envision Group, has announced that it's pausing construction of a battery plant in Florence, South Carolina, 150 miles away. The factory, they said, was going to cost $1.6 billion, and AESC has already spent 2 years and $1 billion on it. The stoppage, the pause, comes down to U.S. policy surrounding federal tax breaks for EV buyers and the incentives around the EV businesses to create a domestic battery supply chain. Some of those tax breaks that were given to companies could be going away. Now, Ford have been very vocal about this as well, so that the business case no longer exists to make batteries for America in America. But this time, the company AESC has said that because of policy and market uncertainty, they're pausing construction in South Carolina. These are the cells BMW have been planning to use in the vehicles built there, and the iX3, but that's Mexico built. It could get cells from other sources, but that's not the work of a moment. BMW's sixth gen cells, cylindricals, 46 95s or 46 120s, I believe, are the dimensions of those ones. Correct me if I'm wrong in the comments.
That's right, Martin. Not in the notes. Martin remembers that, those numbers.
Yes. Don't get much right. Okay. Don't get much right. Dom, I know you watch the battery industry closer than many. Is this a game of bluff? Is it a poker game, AESC, hoping that they'll change some votes in the so-called beautiful big bill? What's going on here?
I mean, it's hard to know for sure. I mean, but my own take is, I think it's a bit of a bluff, or just a way of putting pressure on the politicians in South Carolina, say, or other politicians in the South who, you know, like the idea of the, was it 1500 jobs at that job site? And all that investment, and that, and there's a whole lot of other investment, of course, from BMW and other car makers, depending on that production. So I think this is just like a way of putting pressure in, trying to get, you know, a no vote, or take that some of these penalties for EV makers and maybe buyers taken out of that bill. I don't think it's going to work. I don't think this administration really cares too much about what happens to the EV industry, which is kind of a shame, because the you know, our automakers have invested a lot in this EV industry too, and they all stand to, you know, everyone, the whole industry stands to lose basically a ton of money when this thing goes through. I mean, sales have already started dipping down after increasing, you know, for months and months. I think in April we saw their first EV sales dip in the U.S. And it's probably not going to get a whole lot better if the incentives are taken away, for sure, right? So yeah, that's, man, I can't see them abandoning it. You know, I can't imagine spending 2 years and $1 billion and walking away from that. you know.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter, if it's going to be an ongoing loss, Dom, sometimes your first loss is your best loss. It is best to walk away. I mean, we don't want to hear that, but it's true. I mean, I know people that have been involved with large construction projects, and for whatever reasons, things changed and they walked away and they're like, it's the best thing I ever did. You know, yeah, I lost 18 million on that construction project, but I would have lost 50 million if I stayed in, you know. So
true.
You know, this the current change in policy is going to have a tremendous impact on jobs, on domestic manufacturing, and it's going to set the U.S. back maybe to the point where we can't ever catch up with for the automobile industry. You know, Max Patton, who's in the comment section here, he knows a lot about this. He's been working with Mike Murphy on the EV politics project and EV jobs, and he does his own podcast and so forth. So he knows a lot about this, and maybe we should even have him on as a guest one week just to talk about it, because it's such a pivotal time right now. The next few months, the next 6 months, could really lay the groundwork for whether or not the U.S. has domestic automobile manufacturing 10 years from now. That's how important this is right now. So, it's unfortunate, but, and you said earlier, the current administration doesn't care what happens to the EV industry. I think you're wrong about that. I think they absolutely care. I think they want to kill it.
Yeah.
It's different between being, ambivalent and being,
malicious.
Yeah. So, and I think that's where we're at. I don't think that's a far stretch to make that statement. I think it's pretty clear, but they don't get to control everything. Senate, the Congress does. So, hopefully some of these senators and congressmen in the states that are going to lose thousands and thousands of jobs will grow some sort of a backbone and say, I love everything else you do. You're wonderful. But please let us keep these jobs, so.
Mm. Yeah. So like throwing good money after bad though, I don't know what they're going to decide to do in the case of the AESC situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not the first battery story that has hurt car makers. So over here we had Northvolt, which burnt through something like 15 or 16 billion euros, and they Northvolt made cells. They just couldn't, from what I gather, get the yield right. And this is fabulously complicated to do. The Chinese do kind of make it look easy, don't they? But from a distance, at least, Northvolt couldn't make it work. And that really hurt investors in that company, like Volkswagen. They had to make alternative plans for Porsche and Audi. One of the reasons where negativity was swirling around Northvolt was BMW, I think, put $2 billion into them. And they were going to be BMW supplier. And when BMW realized they couldn't and had to make alternative plans, that was one of the first real nails in the coffin of Northvolt. Northvolt also expanded very rapidly and were doing all sorts of other things around the world in various different plants. And so it failed for many reasons. But it wasn't a case of, well, we lacked money. It was very well capitalized, and they couldn't make it work. So BMW once again having to solve some problems. Worth mentioning, I suppose, as we're talking BMW, if you are on YouTube, you may have seen them all drop at the same time. A lot of car reviewers got a prototype drive of the new iX3. One of our friends over at Inside EVs, a short video featuring Tim Stevens. It'd be nice if you could have come on today, but it was all quite last minute. And so the article is there if you're curious about the car. I am really positive on BMW, their future, Neue Klasse, and all the things that are happening there. But this does seem pretty awesome. So,
yeah, hoping to have Tim on sometime. But I saw that he had driven this, and I was like, oh, I should have him on. So I asked him, but he has some other commitments right now. So, But yeah, this thing is, there's a lot to be excited about this with this car. It's still like a year or so away, but man, it's like big range, big charging.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, it's, we were just talking about the Optic V or the, yeah, just a Optic in general. And this is like that size, I think, right? Around that size. It's a smaller.
I think smaller, it's closer crossover. To Macan.
Sorry?
I think it's closer to Macan.
Okay.
Macan's smaller than that, I'm pretty sure, than the Optic V. I think it's a little smaller.
Right. So I'm just looking here for some numbers here, but I don't see any right there. It's probably in the video, but I can't play the video because it's copyright. Yeah.
Mm.
But anyway, yeah, the iX3, still lots to be excited about there. But it could be affected by this, like the battery pause. Because that's the same batteries in the iX3 that's going to be, or supposed to be being built in South Carolina. So it could get pushed back a little bit. Hopefully not. Hopefully this all work itself out. But yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting. I see somebody posted the Fisker failure pinpoints rushing to market with a product that's not complete. Well, they ran out of money. They didn't want to bring it to market yet, but they had to. They were at the point where they would have folded if they didn't bring it to market. But since you mentioned Fisker, I noticed yesterday I saw an Ocean that claiming, the owner claims everything works perfect on it right now. It's running fine. There's no issues. And they're selling it for $17,000.
No.
He's got like 5,000 miles on it and he paid like $68,000 for it. And he's like, I just need to move on with my life. And he got it for $17,000.
Whoa.
Like, hey. Like I thought about it for a minute. I'm like, I could buy that. Maybe if I get, if I make 4 or 5 videos out of it, I could make my money back and then it breaks. Wow. But like, I don't know. It's
they risky.
They look really cool. But, and there are some places where you can get something serviced right now. I don't know if they're in New Jersey. I thought one was in Florida, but it's a great looking vehicle. It's just such a big gamble. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point Kyle buys one. Because you know, he's going after all like the odd low volume vehicles now, and I would imagine at some point he'll buy one. So I'll wait till he buys one, and then I'll borrow it.
Brilliant.
It just reminded me. This is slightly off topic, but our friend Adrian Wills, who I don't know if he's in the comments today, but he just showed me. He picked up a Think City from like, I don't know, 2008 or 10 or something like that. He just picked it up and it runs.
I drove one of those, a red one. It was cool. Yeah. Back in like 2008 or 2009, somewhere around there. I had one of my first car. No, it had to be 2009 then. I had one of my first electric car meets in 2009 at my restaurant Montclair. And don't forget 2009, what's out there? You know, Roadster was in production and it was all like home built and stuff like that. And somebody brought a Think and I was like, I got to drive this thing. He's like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. It's all plastic.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
It is. Yeah.
There was a lot of them out there though, you know, and they actually were pretty good cars for like a small city car.
Yeah. I don't know if it would really, you know, compare that to like a BMW i3 though, and it's like
i3 was BMW 3 is like a real car. That was $15,000, so
yeah,
it shouldn't be comparable.
True.
Let's move on. And a bit of late news this week: Tesla surprised some by officially launching updated versions of its flagship models, the S and the X. The changes, though, are relatively minor and focused on refinement rather than major tech upgrades. One notable upgrade is the price. Both models are now $5,000 more expensive. Model S long range is now $84,990 and the Plaid at $99,990. Model X long range is $90,000. Model X Plaid's $105,000. There is some new paint. A frost blue is $2,500 and a new diamond black as well. Model S long range is now 410 miles on a single charge. It's meant to be quieter inside. Enhanced, they say, active noise cancellation and improved insulation from wind and road noise. New wheel designs as well. Updated 19-inch magnetites for the Model S and 20-inch perihelix wheels. So the Model X. Improved aerodynamics on the cars as well. Notable is the front camera. A new front bumper camera improves visibility and supports those Tesla ADAS systems. The ambient lighting that we've seen rolling out with Teslas, the interior now features customizable ambient lighting with different animations along the dash. So think Refresh 3 and Y. New bushings, they say, on the suspension and ride will be improved. Both models now include adaptive headlights for better nighttime driving. And the plaid version has some new exterior tweaks. And also Tesla claiming they've found some more room for third row occupants in the Model X, but I'm not sure, you know, where it came from. So did they invented it? I don't know. Did they roll out 800 volts on their premium vehicles like Cybertruck? No. Nope. Did they roll out steer by wire because they have that technology in their locker? No. Did they roll out, you know, four wheel steering? No. Performance changes are minimal as well, which is, I think, a bit of a shame, a bit of a missed opportunity. I've said over the years many times, there's zero point in these cars being on the market. That doesn't mean I don't want Tesla not to sell them. I love, because both Model S and X are really good vehicles, and I'm glad they make them. They add nothing to the bottom line. They just add complexity, and if I was being brutal, I just turn those programs off. But it then loses a big chunk of the premium market, the expensive market. So how do you say, oh, we're a premium car maker going up against, you know, the Germans and stuff? And also there's a piece of my heart as well that it's where it began with the S and the X, and I love those vehicles a long time. If you were just being hard-headed, cold-hearted about it, you'd say there's no point making, no one's buying them anymore. And they're not really bring their best tech there and letting it filter down. So compared to their competition, particularly in China, quite a long way behind now.
Yeah. Well, not just in China, here in the US, and Max just beat me to the punch. Quite honestly, personally, I would take a Lucid Air over a Model S, comparable price spec, and I would take the Gravity over the X. So, well, you know, you don't have to look far, Martin, to get, in my opinion. I know other people have a different opinion, but I would absolutely prefer either of those vehicles. Doesn't mean to say the S and the X aren't really good vehicles. They are. But I think the Air and the Gravity are better in almost every regard.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And you could also, like, Mercedes... what should we call it? EQS. I really prefer that over the Model S. You know, as far, I mean, maybe not the exterior styling so much, but when you're driving it, it's just more comfortable, more quiet, and just goes down the road better, in my opinion.
But there we go. They're still updating them.
Yeah.
It's an odd one. I've seen a lot from analysts, commentators, and these comments are more focused in China, where they said that their model lineup is very stale. And like, the new Model Y is not stale. It's had a very significant exterior refresh. It still looks like a Model Y, but everything's sharper. It's way better on the outside. It's way better on the inside. So I never know whether these are people who, I don't know, they're an analyst on Apple, Nvidia, Tesla or Facebook, whatever, and they're not watching the EV industry like you and I watch it. And so they're like, oh, Model Y has been it. They look at Wikipedia, when was Model Y first out? It's a vastly improved car. Like, the Model S is vastly improved from, what was the smallest pack they sold? A 40 kilowatt hour pack was the smallest on the S, I think. Did anyone actually buy that battery lock pack? But like, that car is wildly different than it was. And I see people saying it's really stale. But then over the course of this year, maybe they've been getting to me. I'm sort of thinking, well, are they right? Is Tesla stale? Because then everyone went, don't worry, Model 2's coming. Don't worry, we've got the new budget Model 2. And then we find out that Musk killed the Model 2 or the small car program. And it's just going to be built on the Model 3 and the Model Y lines. And it'll have cloth seats like the Mexico one they sell that nobody else gets. And you're like, oh, maybe those people have a point. But I don't want to believe them because that Model Y is a really, really solid car. The new Juniper one, I think it's vastly improved, but there we go. Mm-hmm. For what it's worth. Let's, before we go, finish off something I promised at the beginning of the podcast in an interview that recently went viral. It's a few weeks old now. Toyota's chairman, Akio Toyoda, said that 9 million electric vehicles create the same emissions impact as 27 million mild, shabby Toyota hybrids. He didn't say that bit. I'm editorializing a bit. Adding for context and color. That means that one EV pollutes as much as three hybrids, according to him. Now, if you've been around the EV space for all of 5 minutes, you'll know that there's just study after study after study that shows there is no doubt from an environmental footprint that EVs are better than combustion. Now, it depends where the studies are done, and often the studies will say, well, look, if you know, we looked at maybe China and Poland, which are quite dirty grids, quite coaly and quite dirty, but then we looked at the Nordic countries, a lot of geothermal, and then we looked at America. Now, depends where you charge the car, depends on how clean the electricity is. Obviously, I'm charging, it's a sunny day today. This is our one sunny day of the year, so I'm charging the car behind me on solar power. That's about as green as it gets. And some of the studies go, well, you had to buy the solar panels, so let's work out how impactful that is to make solar panels or whatever. And so all of the studies are slightly different, but they all agree, whether it's 5,000 miles or 15,000 miles or 25,000 miles, there's a point at which you drive an EV, of which it crosses over the threshold point and becomes cleaner than combustion. Now, if you're taking it very simply and crudely, the Toyota hybrids don't actually go anywhere unless you put fossil fuels in them. Like, they have a tiny little dinky battery, but that won't get you anywhere unless you park it at the top of a hill, drive it once, and then sell it when it gets to the bottom of the hill. Then it went on electricity. They go up the hill a little bit at the bottom and then roll back again. And so it's odd. Toyota, with their partners in China, unveiled the BZ5 this week. Which is, I think, a 90 kilowatt peak. It's a BYD battery. It's good stuff. BYD have got some good stuff they could sell Toyota, but I think Toyota were like, what do you got in the bargain bin that's 10 years old? So really slow charging, really awful EV. They're not making an effort, and yet they genuinely want you to go and spend your hard-earned money on their electric vehicles, whilst at the same time talking out the other side of their mouth, saying, yeah, but hybrids like are three times cleaner. Utter nonsense. And I think that's one of the problems that many of the car makers have, that they have to shred that line. But Toyota don't care. Like, they're the world's biggest car maker. They're fabulously profitable. Look at the problems that, you know, Japanese companies like Nissan are having. And Toyota are like, ha ha, suckers. So they're doing fine. They can ignore idiots like me on the internet criticizing them. But I don't know, when you've got the chairman of the company saying EVs are crap, and then they're going, oh, but can you just come and spend your money on buying our ones? No, I can't do it, thanks. You can keep your EVs. But there we go. Does that count as a rant?
I mean, this rants. Kind of underlines what this is what the big problem is with Toyota. The head of the company, he doesn't really understand the numbers, or is not getting good information, or maybe he's just, I don't know how he's,
he understands the numbers. He's getting good information. He's selling his products, Dom, and
but
it's
not though. I mean,
hybrids.
Like, how much? So the hybrid things. Yeah, I'll give them that. I mean, it's a brilliant move. It's really, they do a really great job at hybrids, and they make great ones. And, you know, that's totally legitimate. I have no problem with that. But then they use this thing as well. So for their hydrogen programs, their hydrogen fuel cell programs, which they're still, you know, kind of pumping, like their North American PR guy had something on social just recently, and I responded to it. You know, it's like, basically, you know, trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, but if they think that EVs have, you know, this huge amount of carbon baggage, you know, with them, and hydrogen is better than that. Some, I know, I don't know if their numbers are, because they keep throwing billions, they've wasted billions and billions of dollars and years, decades on hydrogen. And they, I don't know, it's just frustrating when a lot of us think that, you know, there's no way that's ever going to work into a, you know, an affordable consumer product, because the, you know, it's super expensive to build the thing, and just the process of hydrogen and sell it to you, you know, it's like $7 a gallon gasoline, basically, you know.
Well, that would come down if we mass produced and had a lot. I think the price would come down, but they don't care about that. Toyota doesn't care about the price. You know, I think they want to have a competitive advantage. Right now, their competitive advantage is in hybrids. They make the best hybrids in the world, period. Mm-hmm. They've always been a leader in hydrogen technology. And so and so is BMW, you know, to that point. And I think that they want to have an advantage. They want to have a competitive advantage. They want to be ahead of their competitors. And that's what they're going to say is the future. You know, hybrids and hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, because they do both of them pretty well. They won't have an advantage when we transition to pure EVs. The Chinese companies have already proven that, you know, they're way ahead of everybody. Tesla's ahead of Toyota. Toyota doesn't like to be looking up at people, and they don't with their hybrids, and for the most part, they don't with their hydrogen vehicles either. So I think this is just their business plan, Dom, to focus on and pump what they do best. And but to think that they don't know that the EVs are better, you know, for the environment, that's ridiculous. That's folly. You know, they have, you know, all the data more that we have, but they're a business and they're selling what they will. They'll pivot at some point. It might be too late, but they're going to squeeze that hybrid rag until there's not a drip of water left in it. And they're hoping that they could do that with hydrogen too, which I don't think would be the case. I don't think that's ever going to be accepted for, you know, light vehicles, you know, light passenger vehicles. I could see it for heavy trucking and, you know, aviation even, vessels, you know, shipping, but for light passenger vehicles, I think I can't imagine that ever working. But he's going to push it as much as he can, and maybe they even realize that the hydrogen isn't going to be the future, but it's a way to divert people from going all in on electric, because you know, if he can convince a lot of their customers, wait a minute, don't go EV. The hydrogen's going to be it. We're not there yet, but we'll get there. Keep buying the hybrids until we have the hydrogen that you want, because that's better. That could be their policy too.
Yeah.
They are doing very well as a business, and probably one disaster away from being in real trouble. Like if there is a conflict that does something to oil prices, where all of a sudden the focus and oil prices, gas prices have come down in many places after some peaks, but they are one, you know, global disaster away from, you know, something happening, gas prices double, and the narrative around electric cars will totally shift, and they've got nothing to come with. And people keep telling me, yeah, but they're, you know, they're solid state batteries. They're spending so much money on it. And maybe that's true. So you don't know what's happening behind closed doors. They could be developing the next greatest EV. I'm doubtful. But what they've come with so far, even what they're rolling out in China, where, like we see, GM's China joint ventures have got way better technology than the rest of us get. And then, you know, what they're doing in China is really, really average as well. I mean, Toyota isn't there a thing in China anymore. They've given up on it because they've got no BEVs that are serious, and no extended range electric vehicles. So they've got no product to talk of that is competitive with those Chinese names. And so, as Tom says, they'll rinse the hybrid business for years and make a ton of money out of it. And why would they do anything different?
But then they might just, you know, totally lose out to all the other automakers in the Chinese market and in Europe. But it's, you know, it's got a lot of Chinese competition as well. And of course, because they have the that competition, the European automakers, you know, Mercedes and BMW, they've got a lot of good EV research and development happening. And, you know, Mercedes especially has, you know, understands the importance of the efficiency and what it takes to build, you know, a good EV. And you can see it with the Neue-Klasse BMWs, you know, when BMW puts their mind to it, they can build like a good EV that can compete with the stuff coming out of China, I think.
Well, we'll wait and see. So why he chose to stick the boot in, I've no idea, but fair play. Before we go, there's been a lot happening around Tesla and self-driving, the Tesla Robotaxi program beginning in June. Now, I don't know if the June 12th date was ever official. It's a bit like that kind of Model 2 program where everyone started, I think maybe an analyst or whatever got a private tour of the facility or the investor relations, and then they called it the Model Q or the Model A or whatever, and then it sort of catches on, and then before you know it, it's just common parlance to be like, oh, when's Tesla launching the Model 2 or the Model A? You're like, they've never ever called it that. And so I don't know whether Tesla ever announced the 12th. Tesla watchers can tell me if that was a hard date in the sand of we are launching Tesla Robotaxi on the 12th. It didn't. It didn't launch yesterday. Elon Musk said it will start on the 22nd. So that is a hard line in the sand, tentatively. Maybe. Well,
no, he kind of softened it up, the messaging around
that.
Of
course he did! Oh, why are we still talking about this? Is just the playbook of Tesla, and honestly, and it's
back
fine.
In 1 minute.
Okay. So
honestly,
I'm wondering,
it's like, fine. Like, no one cares. If Waymo were like, oh, we're rolling out, we're getting rid of the iPaces, and we're having some new ones. It's going to be on the 30th, and they missed it. No one would care. Like, it's not. But we get so worked up, don't we, on Musk giving dates, and then they miss them, and then I get upset because he missed them, and I don't care.
Yeah, no, it's well, I'm wondering what can they possibly do to make it that much safer over the course of 2 weeks. But so there may be the other things going on in the background that we don't know about. But they have seen, there has been one spot of this. So we mentioned a couple of weeks ago that they have a mini fleet testing now on the streets of Austin in one part of the city, and there was some footage of one of them captured that's online here. I'm not sure if I can find it.
Yeah, this was a Twitter account that made one post, and video.
Oh,
so that's
really?
Just someone in Tesla's social media team, and it was a really random username as well.
Terpene Cole.
Yeah, it's their first and only post, and it was captured driving. Oh my! I can't believe somebody got it on camera. Isn't that so fortuitous? I mean, good luck. Good luck. It's so frustrating, isn't it? And I fall for it every time. I get so worked up because the 22nd will come and then it won't happen. And then there'll be a regulation that means they can't do it. And then Musk will say, we could have done it. We could have done it, but the regulations say we couldn't do it. Or they'll because the NHTSA have asked for some details of how they'll handle edge cases, and sun is one of the ones that Tesla says if it's sunny it won't work, and so you know, it'll just take the regulator to say, can we just pause it for a second, then Musk will go, I wanted to, never mind, I'll go to Mars instead, and I'll probably get worked up about it.
So it looks like it has like Robotaxi written here on the side of the car in like that Cybertruck kind of font, kind of, you know, punk kind of aesthetic. Just, yeah. So that's how you can tell, I guess, a Robotaxi, it'll have that little thing. And it's being shadowed by another Tesla, which I imagine it's part of the whole testing regime.
Yeah.
So, cool.
We'll wait and see.
We'll see.
Wait and see. It does come back to the point we were making earlier. Like, is the lineup stale or not? I would argue that the lineup isn't stale. But who cares? Cars that drive themselves. Like, it's whatever. Like, Waymo have been doing it everywhere forever and do hundreds of millions of rides a year. Can Tesla do their first 10? Whatever. Who cares? It's like not a car that I'm excited about buying or driving or owning one day. So,
I mean, a huge portion of their market capitalization kind of rests on their ability to do this thing. right? That's like been the, that's the payoff for years. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll do this autonomous driving, and we're going to make billions, trillion. Yeah. I don't know, tons of money.
Big test. Big test for the company.
That's one of the things that's really bumped their stock price up to the sky high levels. You know, kind of untethered from reality is what I generally kind of how I characterize it in my own. Well, that's my opinion. But
maybe it's tethered to reality. What if the program works really well? They don't have any problems, and all of a sudden there's hundreds of them. Then there's thousands of them. We don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
and if they do it cheaper than what Waymo does, you know, if they can undercut Waymo's price, maybe they can make a go of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
Is it a problem that needs solving? Like, Waymo have been doing this forever. Waymo's out there. Waymo's proven. Waymo is not significantly cheaper than Uber, which does, you know, provide employment for people, and agree or not about Uber's practices. But
like, Waymo and Uber are together in some markets. You can order through Uber. You can order Waymo, I believe, in Austin.
I guess so. But people, you know, get really excited about this, and this is the future of Tesla. Well, I really hope it's not, because that means that the future is not making cool cars. This means the future is making their own cars, and they'll drive you around. I don't fancy that. Oh, would you get in one? So, Dom, would you, if you needed to go somewhere and you had the option of calling a regular cab or a Waymo or a Tesla taxi, like, are you worried, like, safety-wise? Would you just happily get in what you're a Tesla owner? You do the dude loop, and you've got your own channel, and you're always testing the upgrades. Would you trust the system?
I mean, their system better work better than mine. It has more advanced hardware than my car has. Mine's a 2018, so it doesn't have the newest, latest hardware, and so it's not as capable. I think, I mean, it does a pretty good job. I need to do it, especially on the highway. I've been having mostly good luck with it. I need to put up a video from my road trip last week using it a little bit on the highway. It actually did fail on me. We had a bunch of rain showers, and even after the rain stopped, for some reason it was affecting the sensors or the cameras. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't do the FSD properly, but generally if it's being offered, I think it's safe enough to drive in. I would definitely take a Waymo. It's probably a nicer vehicle than some of the Ubers I've been in. I'm kind of curious about the, you know, the Ubers, because you never know what you're going to get, you know, so it's an opportunity to experience a different car that maybe I wouldn't normally have. So I enjoy that aspect of it. With the Waymos, you get, I think, iPaces, and they'll have a Zeekr coming up. I really like to take a Waymo for the Zeekr experience, really. But the Model Y, you know, if it's operating, and by the time I would get a chance to try it, I would know whether or not they've had like crashes previously. I think it would be fine.
And you don't have to listen to the crappy music that the Uber driver wants to play louder than what you would like, and in a language that you can't understand, you know. But I would definitely try it for sure. You know, 100%. I'm looking forward to it. And, I mean, I've been in enough Teslas recently with full self-driving supervised to see how advanced it's gotten in the last, you know, year and a half. It amazes me how far it's come in a short period of time in the last year and a half. It still makes mistakes, at least the vehicles that I've been in. So whether those mistakes would have resulted in a crash, I don't know. I've taken over a couple of times, but it's amazing how advanced it really has had in the last year and a half. I certainly could see Musk, because he takes risk taker, you know, inherently taking a shot on this and saying, okay, we're ready to do this now in a small program, and then expand upon it. So this is it's not the first. We do have Waymo, but you know, it's a different type of program. It's different. It's not as strictly geofenced, and with the mapping that the Waymos rely on, this is the car kind of finding its way, which isn't necessarily the same as the Waymo. So I think it's big enough difference here to say, well, we need to watch this really closely and see how this develops. I'm interested in following it.
Yeah. And no word by the look of it, yet on hardware upgrades for people who bought FSD. I think it's clear that the hardware they got at the time is not enough. But that was the promise, that if you buy it, we'll upgrade your hardware. That was January or February that was promised. And so no word on that as far as I know.
My hardware can't even run a browser on the screen for more than 5 minutes without crashing. So
really,
yeah, it needs some extra hardware for sure.
Yeah, that's it's just so many problems to fix. That's a different set of hardware, 3 to 4, isn't it? So that is different connectors. It's different. It's not like the old. You could even pay yourself in years gone by and take your Tesla in, and it was literally a hot swappable kind of thing. Take it out and get you some new hardware, and many people did that. But that's a whole other thing. I guess, or you own the car for so long, or it goes back on its lease, or you sell it and you give up, and the problem just goes away, you know, for Tesla, and they never have to actually upgrade that hardware, you know, or not. But we'll wait and see. So, but if it starts now or in 6 months' time, it doesn't matter. I'll still get worked up about it when he misses the dates, and you know what a sucker I am for caring. There we go. Hey, we should call it a day. It's bang on as well. Look at that. That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, YouTube is the place to go. You can check out our social media platforms. Tom's always on Blue Sky and X. I'm posting our updates on there as well. If you like the show, then make sure you hit thumbs up. It tells other people that you might like this podcast. And you can, if you want to, while you're on YouTube, subscribe and tap the bell icon for notifications. But it's the thumbs up that really makes a really big difference. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you again very, very soon. Now, the last couple of weeks, we've had a problem with the end of the show, haven't we?
Oh, it's true.
We've had an issue. People who watched to the very end have been complaining.
That's what everybody hangs around for anyway, not us talking about EVs. Don't want to hear
a little bit trigger happy. So
I'll just do it now.
I'll take a pause for the cause, and I'll, you know, 1-1000, 2-1000, then I'll hit stop. Hey, Tom, say ciao.
Arrivederci. Ciao.
1-1000. 2-1000.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.